artists and farters out there. You're listening to the Christmas episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I'm Mo, the producer of the show, and I'm just chilling on my couch right now, sitting next to a fireplace, and you should definitely do the same immediately and listen to this wonderful episode. We got something special for you today. First off, Jordan and me had the pleasure to interview Marco Mori, one of the most successful 3D animators in this world, but we got one problem. He's not an actual immigrant. So at the very end, your beloved host, Jordan Prince, Artsy Fartsy Immigrant numero uno, will bring you a very special personal Christmas story of his own. So stay tuned, have fun, enjoy this episode, and Merry Christmas out there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Christmas special of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. We have an amazing guest. You might know his work from videos with Kanye West and Gorillaz. Yes, the Gorillaz. Please welcome an incredible man, Marco Mori. Okay, Marco, it's Marco Mori, right?
Yeah.
Man.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the show. Mo and I are really big fans of your work, and we're really honored that you are willing to do the show today. So thanks a lot for that, first off.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. I wanted to maybe throw a bit of a curveball, and the first thing I wanted to ask you would be, would you rather fight one horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses?
I think I would fight one horse-sized duck, because I think it's easier to fight one thing than a lot of them, because...
That's what I thought.
Yeah, man. They can have a lot of power too if they combine their power.
Yeah, you know, if they stacked on top of each other, it would be just as dangerous.
Yeah, true, true.
But imagine duck-sized horses. How cool would that be?
If there were duck-sized horses, then the circus industry would be booming right now.
True.
And could you describe the color yellow to a blind person?
Color yellow to a blind person. Maybe when he feels very warm, that's how he could imagine.
Oh, that's nice.
The feeling of the color.
Nice. That's perfect. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to ask something kind of funny at the top. But yeah, so we did some research, and we see that you were born in Lindau, right?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
And only 27 years old, which is pretty incredible for what you've accomplished so far, if I can say that.
Thanks.
So, you know, we saw that you had a history with sports and skateboarding videos and...
Yes, yes, true.
Like, how did you get into that work, and you were like self-editing the videos, or what was going on?
Yeah, true. We were skateboarding with my friends and, you know, trying to do cool tricks and watching a lot of skate DVDs. And actually, we wanted to film us too, so... I borrowed the digital camera from my parents, and we tried to shoot some shots. It's super amateur and shaky. And then I put them into Windows Movie Maker, if I remember right, and just put like black and white on it to spotlight the best tricks and make a fail compilation, because we failed so much. And
yeah, I think trying to make the tricks look awesome.
Yeah, true. I think that's where my little creative career started, but it was more like a hobby, and I did this like three times and then never got back to it.
Actually, you know, it's funny that I saw that, because I had a really similar thing when I was in college. A friend of mine, his name was Charles. He was a really good skateboarder, and I was actually studying film in New Orleans at the time. Mm-hmm. And I had this little cheap, like, do you remember these DVD handy cams?
Yeah.
I had one of those, and I thought I was the coolest guy that I had this. And I was trying to like edit his skate videos kind of like in camera. And I was really bad at it, but I really wanted to shoot skate videos because I was so into, I was never a skateboarder, but I was really into skate videos and like the stuff that like Spike Jonze would do back in the day. And, you know, I was such a fan of that vibe. And I don't know, it was such a cool, there was such a cool culture around it, especially because, I mean, you and I are only 2 years apart. So I think like, were you ever a fan of like Jackass? Like the guys who were in Jackass?
Yeah, definitely.
Shit, man.
Jackass,
like,
all the movies.
Yeah, all, like the whole skate culture around that before it became just like funny violence.
Ben Majera. Nice.
Sick.
Yeah, of course.
But you also have this really great ability to bring across like these textures and this vibe. And I'm just wondering sometimes, when you make these, do you try to get a specific message across, like with satire or politics or social criticism? Is that sometimes in your mind when you're creating it?
Of course, it's always in my mind. And but I don't want to make this like obviously, because if you see something, you always have your own story to it. Like you're building your own opinion to it. No matter if I say, okay, I want to deliver politics in this post, but it just doesn't care. It doesn't care because you create your own opinion about what you see. So, and I think it's not necessary for me to actually say that this has to be this message, you know, because you're always interpreting your own way. So of course, sometimes when you see a lot of bigger people in my videos, you can say I'm fat shaming or all this stuff, but it's also has the message like feel good, you know, like just feel good as you are. But these are, that's not the main thing. I create these, you know, it's a sub-level message. So
right. I wanted to get into that as well. You know, like how you choose the characters that you create, because it's interesting that you say that you, so do people attack you for using like more obese people in your videos?
Yes, of course. At the beginning, I got a lot of these messages, but nowadays they're getting less and less because I think people are getting used to some things so fast that they don't care even. And no more, like.
Do you think it's more that they get numb to the amount of content that comes out, or do you think they get used to what you're doing?
It's like both. It's like you get confronted with so much information today, like so many different kind of stuff which you can't really reflect, and it's just like making you dull, you know? It's so you see something crazy, and 1 week later, it's not that crazy anymore because you have seen 10 things which are more crazy than this.
That's true. That's true. I see that a lot in like satirical news. Like I watch a lot of American political satire. I mean, I think a lot of people watch that nowadays. And it's funny when they're making fun of something that happened yesterday, there's already been two more crazy stories to come out. And you have to wonder, how can anyone keep up with that much content?
Yeah, true.
It's so overwhelming sometimes. But yeah, I was just curious, you know, like, is it that every video or every image that isn't connected to a client or to a brand, is it always saying something for you, or is it sometimes just funny and dark and came into your brain while sleeping or something?
Yeah, true. It depends. Sometimes it's just like, I want to try to learn a new technique. And so I watch some tutorials. Then I try to recreate this, and while recreating it, some new ideas come in my mind, like I could connect this effect with this, and this could be funny if I make it a little bit different. You know, it's just like playing around and see what I come up with. And most time, if it's funny, I have to giggle myself in front of my PC, and every time this happens, I know this could be a funny video, so I don't want to keep it for myself, so I want to share it, and maybe it makes some people giggle too.
Would you say that that's the goal, kind of, like to make people laugh or to...
Yes, to just to make them feel something. It's it's just like you scroll down your Instagram timeline. It's just like you're pathetic about you just scrolling. And then if there is something where you actually feel something, where you stop and maybe watch it two times or three times, I think this is the best what could happen to you.
I think that's something I really like about your content as well. Maybe you've heard that a lot, but like, of course, some things are extremely funny, and you've had a few of your clips go really viral because they are so, as our friends at Netlight would say, it's very absurd, some of the videos. But I also like some of the videos that really that are kind of disturbing. I think that some of the darker stuff that isn't as funny is just as interesting because it's like you say, it's something that breaks up the feed.
True.
I was wondering, so what draws you to the aesthetic of combining real footage with 3D animation? You know, how did you discover that that style portrays your ideas best?
It was for my bachelor thesis, actually. We went to Amsterdam to get some footage of Amsterdam, and then we tried to combine it with 3D animation, and it was like... It was about 4 years ago, I think. And it was super hard to get this because the software was not like today, not that many options. But it was a lot of fun because it's like merging reality and animation, because you need to get the lighting, the real lighting, how are the shadows, and, it's like really trying to get it as realistic as possible to trick the viewer that it's actually not real. And I think this is what's most interesting for me to get this challenge.
Would you say that you're kind of intrigued by this? I guess you know this term, the uncanny valley.
Yes. I have read it a lot of times under my post, and I had no clue what it is, so I googled it, and I think it's pretty fitting to my videos.
I was gonna say, sometimes people have, you know, there's like when they're fans or when the people who watch them kind of label, or I wouldn't say box, but maybe people like putting labels on things, but when they label your work as something that would fit in the uncanny valley world, I was curious if that's something that you're kind of proud of, that intrigues you, or if you're like, no, that's not really what I'm going for, you know. But it's but it's good that you see that, because I think it fits that pretty perfectly sometimes.
Yeah,
it's like just close enough to bother you.
Yeah, true.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, of course. And as soon as something bothers you, you're feeling something, and then we're at the goal, like just said.
Yeah, exactly. And I was curious. So we mentioned that you got some comments in the past about, you know, creating these obese characters for your shorts. And I wonder, how do you come to the conclusion of the characters that you make? Because of course they're not all just obese people. It's a popular trend of yours, but you also have really distinct, personalities that come through. Would you say that they are born from the texture that you're trying to create, or do they just come to you, I want to do it like this?
Actually, it's a mixture, because I'm not that independent from the character, because I can buy the base model and then I can modify it, but like I can make it thinner or bigger, or like I can change the nose type of stuff. Actually, I want to have them characteristics and something that's not that pretty and like normal standards, which you see a lot on Instagram. Like, there are so many people who show their perfect life, and everything is good and pretty and normal, no edges. And I want the opposite. Like, I want these characters to be edgy, to be recognizable, and just to be different.
Yeah. You know, one question that we thought about pretty often, and I think a few people who are fans of yours probably have already asked, but I'm really curious about the common use of brand placement. I mean, why is Nike shown so often? Is it something that you do for fun? Does it represent something you want to say? Is it an endorsement?
Actually, I started using the Nike swoosh just to get attention from Nike because they have so super cool projects in the CGI area for the shoes and everything, and I wanted to get in. And I love the slogan, the "Just Do It," because it's so fitting. Like, people always ask how to be a motion designer, how to be a superstar, and it all starts with "Just Do It," actually. So you just have to start, and that's another reason
why. So the Nike slogan "Just Do It" is like, yes, literally motivating, yes, for you.
Yes, of okay. course. Okay. True.
But did Nike ever get in touch with you?
Yes, actually, yeah. And maybe...
Just do it.
Yeah, man, just do it. I told them. maybe January next year, we will start a little project and see how this works out.
That's great, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, man. That's I'm cool. excited. Thank you.
And yeah, because that was something that was really on our mind. We saw it so often. We thought, man, this guy's got to be working for Nike. or he must just fucking love this brand.
But yeah, you know, actually, I love it too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is a cool slogan.
Yes.
You know, something that makes your videos really special, besides the characters and the textures and the message and stuff, is the sound design. Man, I'm so curious. How do you choose what sounds are made and when to not use them, and how do you craft them?
Sometimes I'm working with a sound designer from London. He's pretty amazing. I'm telling him like what sounds I need, and every time he's super on point and I'm super happy with the results. And if I'm my own sound designer, I just have it in my head like how it could sound and could add like an extra funny moment, and then the hard time is to find the sounds actually online, because like how do you Google for like, I don't know, specific movements. Now I know that they are called squish and swoosh, and but it was a hard time finding out, like I really had no idea what I should type in. I had it in my head, like I knew what it was. I know what I was searching, yeah, but I don't know how. And if I type this in Google, getting a lot of different results, but not what I was looking for.
You probably see a lot of strange porn if you type that into Google.
Yeah, if you have safe filter off.
Not safe for work. Yeah. Fuck, man, that's so interesting. Yeah, I was curious about that. That's actually one of my favorite words, is the word in English for like splat and swoosh and kapow and stuff. It's the word of a sound, and it's onomatopoeia. And that's
okay.
Such a cool.
Yeah, maybe you should write me this later so I can be so specific.
Oh man, yeah. Well, I was just really, really curious about that. And how do you describe, like, to this London sound designer, or does he just create it from what he sees, and then you say yes or no?
No, I'm giving him notes in the video. Like down left, I write something like blow the whistle, and then make squishy movements, like on I don't know the English word for Turnhalle, like where you make gymnastics.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like in a gym, this squishy when you're hitting with your skin.
Like, yeah, like the squeak, like of a fresh Nike shoe on the gym floor.
True. Like I try to describe it how I would describe it to somebody who was not on the same place and didn't hear the sound. So
how would you? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. It's okay. I was fine.
So you know, you and I met at this private event where you spoke, and I was playing with my band in the corner. And I'm just curious. Let's make a scenario. So let's say I'm releasing a new album next year. All of this is true. And let's say I come to you and I were to say, okay, Marco, here's the song I'm thinking of for the single, and I would really like to do a video with you. So from your perspective, how does it normally work, and how would we create a video from scratch together?
So the first thing I would ask, when would you need it?
Do you have can you afford it, Jordan?
Can I afford it? Yeah, probably not.
If you have something in mind already, like a rough idea or a concept, okay. It's always nice to have a starting point. And of course, like what budget you want to spend. So
can you say your average like indie budget to professional budget? I mean, you don't have to if you don't feel comfortable.
No, it's okay. But I have the same budget for everybody, like no matter if he's rich or not. Like I'm starting at $800 per day. And if you need me longer, like 2 weeks, it's always a budget for the whole project then. So I try to calculate the effort for me, how many days it will take me to create this, and then I calculate it, make a little buffer time and all this kind of stuff. And then, but most of the time they come with, hey, I've got $2,000. This is my idea. Is this possible? And then, we create the concept based on their idea to fit the budget and their needs. So both sides are happy. And most of the time this works out.
Okay. So basically, if someone's coming to you, like if the artist personally, or if the, you know, the PR person or the marketing person comes to you and says, we want to work with you on a video, usually they already have like a time frame, a budget, and a concept, and they already know what they would like you to do because they've seen you do it, or they ask you, how would you bring across this idea?
It depends. Okay. Sometimes
what did Kanye do?
We're getting to that mode. Don't jump ahead.
True. Sometimes they're asking me, because they already saw something which I created and saying, I want like this effect. And sometimes they come up with a concept and say, is this possible? And how would you do it? Can we see like a version before we work together? And I always say no, because I don't work for free. And then it's a lot of like back and forth until we get on the same way and start working.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. I was really curious about the whole method and like how you jump into it and stuff. But speaking of Kanye and speaking of of how you would work on something, you know, I really want to talk about like, I mean, you're a 27-year-old dude from Lindau. So how the fuck are you Young Thug's lead animator? You know, like, you know, for those people who are listening because they know the show and might not know you, I mean, you've worked on a Gorillaz track, Trans, you worked on YNW Melly and Kanye's song, Mixed Personalities, and you're Young Thug's lead animator amongst other like huge artists. So, you know, how did you go from making this animation, having this popular Instagram channel to your first project? Was the first one, the first big breakthrough, like Gorillaz? How did that change for you?
Gorillaz was actually super random. It was a message of over Instagram from, I think it was the director, and he was just asking if he could have my mail because he has a request. And then we were communicating over mail, and he just asked me if I want to do a shot for Gorillaz. And I was like, the Gorillaz. So, and he was, yeah. And I was like, yeah, sure. What you need? When do you need?
And how much money do you got?
Yeah. So, and like, I was like, can I start today? I leave everything. So let's work. Let's make it safe because a lot of in the scene is like you get an offer from cool project and you're super excited about it, and then it's just getting lost, or they found somebody else, and so
you jumped on always, it immediately, like, let's do it today.
Yeah,
send me what
yeah,
you
yeah yeah like true that. I was like I want it, and I don't let it go if I grab it. So it's like
I respect that, man.
My project.
I'm of the same mentality. Like if there's any opportunity to get like a level up in something you're really passionate about, and you have to see like just the tiniest sliver of an opportunity, and you don't grab it and hold it and like pull the doors apart to step in, then that's kind of like on you if it disappears in a way.
True. And I had no clear no clue about what he actually want from me. So it could have been something which I've never done before and would be super crazy, but that didn't matter. Like I was open for everything, and so I just want to gorillas, nice, perfect. Yeah, that's how it started. And the other funny story is about the Young Thug thing, because it was I was surfing around on Instagram and checking what others are doing, and I saw he's called Vergemanden, I think. He's doing super awesome stuff too, but it's super like ugly and creepy and disgusting, but it's super catchy. It's super catchy. And I tried to recreate a scene from him, like, the exact technique and, the visual aspects are pretty same, but I posted it and I credit him, like, inspired by Vergemanden. And on the same time, this Vergemanden dude was working with a director on this, I think it was Lil Wayne, where he's flying through the completely animated world and bouncing on big butts, etc. And this guy saw that I was posting like the same video the Vergemanden does, but I gave credit to him, and he was so surprised that I gave the credit to him, that he shoot me a message and was like, nowadays it's not normal that people credit, they just steal and pose and super nice from you, maybe we can work one day. And that's how he had my name in his head. And
that's how it works, yeah, right? Actually, you have like one lucky thing that happens, and it connects you to a certain project, and your name happens to be on it, and someone just happens to look at it, you know? And
yeah,
like,
man.
Who is this guy? Oh, let's see if he has like an Instagram or whatever. It's so funny. It's like, as much as, at least today for me and in my head, like, it's as much about how good you are and how confident you are in what you're doing, but it's just as much luck.
Yes, of course. I think you can't be successful without luck and without working hard. So you can work hard and have no luck, and you won't get successful, and the other way around too. So you need both of it. And it's, as you can see, it's just the small things which basically led to this first job. And he actually just wanted one or two shots from me for this video. But then it was like, oh, can you do this too? And maybe you can that too, and this and that. And it was like, okay, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I went from just animating two shots to lead animator. And I think this was the big start where I actually got connected to my dude, Sam Shea, also known as NewtRobot, whom I was working for the last videos. Since then, like, we started a two-man career, basically. Like, he was directing and supervising and also animating and preparing stuff for me. And we were creating projects together since then. So
you guys have been collaborating since then together?
Yeah. It's like all the videos I've uploaded, it was in collaboration with him. All the music videos.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
But one thing. Sorry, but
no, go ahead.
I wondered all of the time, project like this, let it be Young Thug, Kanye, whoever. Let's keep in mind, you're still living in Augsburg, Germany, and still are at university. Do you do all the work from home, from Augsburg, or
How does...
Yes.
Is it all online?
Yes. Yes, actually, I'm just working from home because I feel most comfortable there. And I think there's no need to, like, fly to America and work from there because I wouldn't do anything else than just sitting in front of my PC and working with my programs, you know?
I mean, it's, you know, it's 2019. That's kind of like where most of the work happens anyway, you know?
Yes, true. You need to take the advantages of global networking and connection and internet speed and all this kind of stuff.
You know, when you got these jobs, like for Gorillaz or Young Thug or for Kanye or whatever, were you doing like FaceTime conversations or was everything through email and texting?
Sometimes it's phone conferences and phone calls. But most of the time it's actually email because FaceTime, like seeing each other is not necessary. And email just to attach a lot of files and phone calls always, I like the most of the time before the project starts, we have a phone call to discuss like a time schedule and all these kind of organization stuff. And then it depends. I'm working super closely with my clients. Like if I have their number on WhatsApp, I can like send them pictures really quick to check, hey, is this color okay? Is this position okay? To get feedback really fast for small things. And sometimes I'm just like sending a mail and waiting a day to get feedback and then maybe have a phone call if it's too much to write and better to talk. So it really depends on the situation.
You know, if I can say this, it's interesting to me as an American living in Germany to imagine that this kind of, this particular brand of creativity that you have comes from a 27-year-old German guy from Lindau. It's, I mean, and I mean, this is a huge compliment too, because it just goes to show that people shouldn't expect everything the way that they always kind of imagine it will be. You know what I mean? Like even just talking to you now for these past 30 or 40 minutes, like you're very, you seem like a very, a guy of brass tacks, like, you know, this is the way it should be. This is how I work. And, you know, why waste time with this when I can just do it like this? This is the more logical, economical way to work. It's very forward thinking and like, I don't know, calm minded and logical. And it's interesting to me to like, to talk to you and see your personality for the first time and then see what you're putting out on Instagram, because it just shows that there's this really diverse part of your brain that you it's almost as if you save it for yourself and you expose it in these little droplets.
Yeah, true. Sounds like a plausible explanation.
I would love to know what your search history is like.
I'm always browsing privately.
Yeah, incognito mode.
Yeah, true, man.
Oh, well, I mean, Mo, is there anything else on your mind? I think I've gone through, well, oh yeah, my last question, right. I forgot. This is the last thing that I had written down for me was, you know, why are you, and this is purely curiosity, why are you doing a master's at Uni Augsburg when you already have a career of this caliber? What keeps you interested in doing?
Actually, after my bachelor, there was no career and there was no Instagram. I started it with my master and I did this master just to have some more time to learn and to get more specific into certain softwares and actually to learn Houdini. I wasn't able to play with Houdini in my bachelor because it was too crazy for me. It was too hard. And I think in the master, there was enough time to get behind this because it really takes some time, some starting time to learn, but it's definitely worth it. And yeah, I used it to actually build the start of my career. and
okay,
and
so to get like already started
money
it.
From
yeah
it was the starting point for Instagram and the daily posts. If you can scroll down my profile and you will see the first posts I posted. There was actually super shit. It's like this was
I think everyone's Instagram, the first post is really bad.
Well, man, you don't have to scroll.
That has been consistent since day one.
Yeah, that's my service for you don't have to search for the shitty posts, you just get them
just
right away.
Open up the page.
But so you are finished with your master's degree now?
Yes, I finished this year in March, so I'm so super free now to work.
So tell us about your plans. So what's going on right now? You already talked about finally collaborating with Nike, but
what's next?
What is Marco Mori doing now in the beautiful city of Augsburg?
Right now, I'm doing a music video for Finch Asozial, a German rapper, and then I will make holidays, Christmas holidays, until beginning of January. And then I will go back to work and maybe a next project with Nude Robot, like Sam Scheer. And would be another music video. Let's see if there will be something, or maybe the Night project. So a lot of opportunities which could happen, but you know, it's just sure if I got that job and I start working on it. So.
But do you have any big goals or? I don't know, you do a lot of music videos and you're like, okay, there's one artist I really want to work with, or one big goal you have.
I was writing with Drake last week, and maybe we will get a video in 2020 with him. This would
maybe
be super cool
if he calls you on your cell phone.
And there it is.
I told you, shitty content.
Oh, nice.
You know what's funny is you made that joke, and in my head, I was already trying to think of a pun for Hotline Bling. God damn it. I'm sure that your many, many fans and collaborators are happy to know a bit more about you and your personal life. And from the bottom of my heart, man, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and to deal with our bullshit. And it really means a lot to us. We're really big fans.
Yeah, you're really welcome. Thanks for having me again, man. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely, man. Thanks a lot. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Hi, everyone. This is Jordan coming to you from home. I'm recording this after the interview that you just heard. Mo and I thought it might be a nice idea that to tack on to this Christmas special, I bring to you a little story from my life. But first and foremost, I really wanted to thank everyone who's been listening to us for the past 6 months. This passion project has been something that's really excited Mo and myself since the first concept, and to see the numbers climbing and to see these people checking in and writing in with their own stories and to see people excited about the people that we're interviewing is really, it's been changing the world for us, kind of. It's really a pleasure, and we just really want to say from the bottom of our hearts, thank you very much. It's Christmas time. I'm here at home in Munich. It's mid-December, and I thought I would share with you guys my first Christmas abroad. So when I was growing up, Christmas was kind of the standard American tale. You had this expectation on Christmas Eve with your, I have a brother who's a few years older than me, and up until he was maybe like 16 or so, the routine was always that we would try and stay up as late as we could on Christmas Eve because we knew that Santa was coming. I mean, by that time we knew that it wasn't Santa Claus, but when we were young, we were complete believers. And the cute thing was that even after we found out, my parents still gave us some gifts on Christmas Eve from them, and then the big gifts in the morning were still signed from Santa. I always thought that was kind of sweet. And that was always the expectation. And I really you see this in the American movies, and it's still something that really excites me, and it's still something that really feels like home. And now that I live in Germany, for those who don't know, in Germany, they do 3 days, and Christmas, the big day of Christmas, is actually for us Christmas Eve. It's the 24th. So at least in my wife's family, which is who we spend Christmas with when we're here, the tradition is that on Christmas Day, on 24th, that's when you put up the tree and you decorate that while people are cooking. And then in the evening, you have this big meal. And in my wife's family, they cook a big goose, which I had never had before until coming here. And I thought that was so crazy, this huge bird. Kind of reminds me of Thanksgiving with the turkey, but it's different meat, and it tastes great. And there's this whole sauce that takes them days to cook and simmer in, and it's delicious. And then my father-in-law gets this giant 3-liter bottle of red wine that he shares with everyone who wants some, and it's aged, and it's been in his cellar for years, and it's so cool to have this big welcoming vibe, you know, for everything. It's very family-based. It's very, everyone dresses up nice for the dinner. You go upstairs, everyone's putting on makeup and ironing the shirts, and everyone comes downstairs really excited to present themselves for this, you know, this special evening. You have the dinner and you get a little bit loose with the wine. And then when my wife's grandfather was still alive, I think we're still doing it, but at least my first Christmas here, he was there with us. And we would go into the living room where they had the tree, and they would have all this old Christmas music. And there were some standards that I recognized, like Silent Night, but of course it was all in German. And my first year, I didn't know any German at all. I mean, I haven't gotten much better, but then I didn't know anything. And so there I was, sitting between her parents and her brother and her sister and their respective partners and the grandpa, and we're all singing Silent Night in German and a few other classics that I didn't know. And it was really sweet. It was something so like personal and humbling and kind of reminiscent of these kinds of movies that you grow up on. And after that, then you open all the presents. So you do all the presents on Christmas Eve. And the next day is kind of just this open day. They go to a big lunch together with all of the family. So sometimes it feels like 100 people. And that's also really nice. And that's when you get this giant feeling of family. You know, my family's always been more, I don't want to say too small, but it was always very intimate. My mother has quite a large family on her side, but we, for some reason, were never quite close with them. So I only saw a certain aunts and uncles and cousins at certain times, like maybe on a birthday, maybe on a holiday. We would go drive and visit them for a short time, and then we would leave. We spent more time with my father's family, which is ironic, seeing as how that was the most dysfunctional and the ones that we had the most trouble spending time with. But I guess that's kind of how these major holidays work. And on Christmas, like I think it was always the Saturday before Christmas, we would already be out of school, and we would go to my dad's mom's house, and that's where I would spend time with my a couple of my cousins and a couple of aunts and uncles, and of course the grandparents. But that was the extent of my family experience. You know, I knew people on either side, but really the closest knit people were mom and dad and me and my brother. So when I came here and we had this giant lunch with her whole family, and this was my first Christmas in Germany ever, and I didn't even know all of her family yet. And there you see, like, I mean, it really feels, I think it's over 70 people that are just surrounding you. And now I was the outsider. I was this different person who didn't speak their language, who everything was fresh and like totally virgin eyes to this whole thing. And that was a really eye-opening thing. Like, there really are these big families that do these big things on holidays, and I had just never really seen that before. And it seems like everyone really likes each other too. Everyone's kind of moving around different tables, spending time with each other. And I think on the next day there's even one more special meal. I think I had that wrong. I forgot something really important. On the 24th, which is for Germany Christmas Day, then after you open all the presents, then you go out to a bar. And there's this one bar in her hometown that everyone goes to. I'm not the biggest fan of that,
I don't really love always being at this bar, but it can be really fun and the people are always really down to party. So you go there, you get absolutely wasted. And then the next day you go to this really nice lunch that her Uncle Peter makes. And he's this, man, he's really like a five-star chef. I mean, it's unbelievable what this guy makes. And he's really cultured and he's really into film and he's really into music. And he's always talking about the newest books. And he's really interesting guy. And we have a nice lunch there, and that's kind of the hangover day. And then the next day after that is the lunch with the huge whole family. So that's the order. And I remember my very, very first Christmas here was actually really special for another reason, because when I was living in New Orleans, my wife and I, we were still dating long distance, but there was a time where we broke up. There was a big chunk of this year, I think it was 2014 or 15, where we just, I think it was 2014, where we just weren't together anymore. And there was this moment at the end of that year, maybe towards around fall, where we reconnected somehow, kind of just drawn to each other. And we were writing each other messages, and we were starting to video chat a bit more and just kind of reconnecting. And then we actually decided maybe we should try and be together again. And this was a huge risk for me, because I knew that this would mean I would have to leave America. And the Christmas holiday was sort of the catalyst for the whole thing. And so we said, okay, I'm gonna take these 2 weeks that I have off from school, and I'm gonna take off work, and I'm gonna save up, and I'm gonna come visit you. So I set up all the initiative. I got my passport set up, and I saved up this money, and I flew to Germany for the first time. No, for the second time, but this time it was really, really with a lot of pressure. And then there I was. I was with her family, and it was at her house, and I was really, really special. And I was kind of in love with the whole atmosphere in a strange way, but also I was scared. You know, it was all new, and I really felt so much like someone from a different planet, or I felt so much like someone from a different part of the world. But there I was, and there was my wife, and she had made this card for me that kind of went through all of our memories together, and the ups and the downs, and the things that meant the most to her that maybe I had even overlooked at the time. And at the end of the card was her expressing this love, that she really wanted us to try to do this, that she loved me. And that's where I realized kind of the main purpose of this whole Christmas time is to rekindle this relationship and give it all the chance that we could. And I'm still living here for her. So I guess it worked out. It was a Christmas miracle. But yeah, that was my first Christmas in Germany. It was a big eye-opening experience to see this huge family. And in my memory, there was snow everywhere, and her hometown is in the mountains, and it's just like a picture book. So it was really cinematic for me. And the memory of it is really, really romantic and pure and beautiful. And I think it's something that I'm always going to think about. So to all of you who have been spending time with us the last 6 months, I just want to say thank you again so much, and we wish you a really Merry Christmas, however you like to spend it, if it's with your family, or if it's with your partner, or if it's just on your own with a glass of wine, whatever makes you happy, whatever makes you think back on a beautiful year and fills your soul with energy and happiness and holiday cheer. But it's really been a pleasure being in your ear for a while now. And we really have some great guests coming next year, and we have a new format coming. We're going to try and add more shows per month, so stay tuned for that. And from me and from Mo and from M94.5, Merry Christmas and have a Happy New Year. Thanks.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Ein Podcast von Jordan Prince, produziert von Moritz Batscheider für M94.5.